The president was greeted by veteran Soviet ambassador
to offer condolences on the death of Leonid Brezhnev.
The operation is what's crucial, because what we do is for the good of the many. Don't let your conscience get us killed.
If you tell her now, it will all blow up.
But at least she'll know who she is.
Every move you make will never value you.
This is the West Coast Project podcast for, I don't know what, Jamie, the Americans, just catching up.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I've had a few people ask for a recap of the season.
Yeah, I did too, and I think it's a great idea.
But besides all that, I just wanted to tell you that it's in our little podcast family. Like, between Michelle and I signed off after last season for Fargo and stuff, you start to miss the people that you talk to because, you know, we live a far distance apart. We don't see each other, hang out for coffee and stuff. So unless we're podcasting, you don't get to catch up.
Yes, that's true. That's exactly right. And I missed you, too. Like, I texted you and I was like, Mick, I miss you, Mike. It's so funny because you get accustomed to talking to somebody on a regular basis and then they're just gone.
Yeah, I even just texted the Nothing Important guys and said, hey, guys, what's up? I miss talking to you. Let's find something to podcast about. And so they were like, yeah, well, let's do it. So it's kind of a friendly community that you start to miss people in that you don't interact with if you don't have a reason to podcast.
That's so true.
So did you have anything outside of the Americans, anything interesting? You sounded like you were working on some stuff.
Yeah, actually, okay, so I started a new job. You know, I'm a technical writer, and technical writers are typically orphans. So we kind of bounce around to different places, and we never really have a home. We never really have like a permanent job. But there's this great company that has a different sort of a model that they use, a business model, and they hire like full-time people, and just send them out to different places as consultants. And so that's what I'm doing now. So like my life has changed completely since the 2 weeks that we've spoken.
Wow. Well, congratulations on your new job.
Yeah, thank you.
The other thing that's really a shame is you have this crystal clear new internet now, and I think we only did one podcast with it.
I know.
You got it like the last week of the Americans.
I know. It's like amazing. Our audience should know that Mike, I don't know if you guys don't listen to any of his other podcasts. First of all, you should. And second of all, Mike is just great and he's got great production quality. And like we had little glitchy stuff happening during the Americans and that was all me. I was living literally like at the bottom of a forest. And so I had terrible signal all the time. And now I don't have that problem anymore.
Yeah. It's really sounding good.
Yeah. Thanks.
So let's take care of the Americans here, Jamie. Any last final thoughts from the whole season in general and not just the last episode, but any final feelings about the season that just ended?
All right. So I have to tell you, you know, I think about the show and I feel like, you actually, with the help of like one of the courses I was taking this semester, I feel like I'm on the precipice of a greater understanding of how these writers approach this show and how sort of Joe Beisberg kind of conceived it, because I think, you know, you and I have talked about how deep it is.
Yep.
And how much content there really is inside of the writing and you know, the story. And I feel like there's something greater there that I'm just starting to sort of realize, because it's not just like, okay, so we've got all these episodes laid out. I believe that they're not just arcs within the story. I think that each season has a sort of a metaphorical angle, like a way that you could see it metaphorically, and that there are themes that are specific to the different seasons. And I haven't quite figured it out yet, but I'm working on it. And so when I get done, I'll tell you guys what I think. But yeah, I mean, it's deep. And I think this one had a lot to do with bodies, because if you think about sort of, you know, the lines that kind of ran through the episodes of the seasons of this season. You know, you had kind of Elizabeth's body betraying her because of the tooth thing. You had, you know, Annalise being disposed of. There was a lot of physicality involved in a lot of the episodes, and particularly the last several. It was about people and bodies and emotion and how they, you know, used their bodies and that kind of stuff. It was really fascinating. And so I'm still kind of looking at it and thinking about it. And I haven't had the chance to go back and rewatch any episodes from this season yet, but I will, and I'll let you know what I'm really thinking.
Yeah, that's a really good call. Like the theme of what do you have to pay? What's your currency? Like their currency was their bodies in a lot of times. They paid for things and tricked people with their bodies. They did honey traps and stuff.
Yeah. And then not even that. that I think is such a strong theme, you know, through the series actually, but it's not just that. It's like this season was almost like about, you know, I mean, cause like even look at like, oh gosh, what was the guy's name? The programmer, the computer whiz guy. Do you remember his name right now? The one that Philip had to kill?
Was it Glenn?
It was something. It was Gene.
Yeah.
Gene. Okay. So even Gene's death, I mean, look at how very vividly his death was portrayed. I mean, you know, you saw his body swinging. Like, I mean, that was just, like, normally, even when there's a dead body hanging in any TV show or movie or anything, it's not swinging. Like, that was deliberate, you know?
Yeah, like he had just done it.
Yeah, and it was so physical. There was like a, you know, a very sort of a visceral, emotional feeling to that. And it's, so I don't know. I'm still, like I said, figuring it out. But I definitely think that bodies and maybe a body-mind kind of betrayal thing, you know, going on, because that's really so much of this program anyway, is, you know, you may think something completely different inside yourself, and particularly Philip, but you have to use your body in ways that you may really detest.
Well, there was also the theme of collateral death, like just the placeholder people that had to be moved on the chessboard, like the guy who got crushed under his car just so the girl could get the job at the plant.
Yeah,
the lady in the warehouse just happened to be there at the wrong time. Just those are the eeriest deaths, because they're so meaningless. They just got in the way, you know, or they were moved. They moved the story one step ahead.
That's perfect. I love the way you worded that, because that really is a big part of it. Because you and I even talked about that. About, remember, like for the season finale, a few weeks ago, we were talking about pointless deaths, and the character Yusuf said that comment to Philip. He said, "Is it worth it? Was it worth it?" And we were talking about that sort of being the question, the bigger question over this whole series, and the question mark that's over the head of that character Yusuf, and it's kind of over Philip now too. Because, and for Philip, I think the answer is no. I think that's the answer for Philip, deep, deep, deep inside.
It always has been no. I think.
Yeah,
he's put it to the back of his mind, or he's justified it artificially. But I think it's always, that always has been a no for him.
Yeah, I agree with you.
If you look at like another series, like in Breaking Bad, you know, some deaths are, they're very, very sad and compelling, like Hank's death. Spoiler alert, Hank's death. And then there's what's her name? What was this second girlfriend's name?
Whose girlfriend?
Jesse's girlfriend.
Oh, Jane.
No, his second girlfriend.
Oh, his second. Oh.
Andrea. Andrea's death was like so meaningless. It was much easier to, I mean, there was a reason for Hank's death. He had to be taken out. He would have caught the guys. But Andrea, it was just so sad. It was just so meaningless. Just 1 second, poof, she's gone. And those are the eeriest types of deaths. And there were a lot of those in the Americans. More so than the assassinations of like important people. Right, there's collateral, just wiping pieces off the chessboard to make room for the real game to happen.
Right, yeah, and that's, and you know, it makes you feel like that that's something that's true about life too. You know, people die pointlessly for no reason or for stupid reasons, you know, and they're gone. It's over for them. And the show is really good at illustrating that.
Yeah, they're expert at it. So I read somewhere or heard somewhere, I'm sorry I can't attribute it to where I remember getting it from, but season 3 of The Americans was so successful because they stopped inventing and they started discovering. Like they fleshed out their world, the universe of the Americans. It didn't need any more fleshing out. We didn't need to know Stan was the FBI neighbor next door and he became who he was. It's they got past the how did you get here, and they got into like what does it feel like to be here, and that was the scene was set for season 3, and the characters could just flourish within the setting that they had created in the first 2 seasons.
That's true. You're so right about that. And without really, like, really putting a real form to it the way that you just did, I think I really kind of reveled in that this season because there were so many really rich scenes between characters who are now familiar with one another. And the audience understands the relationship between the characters, like Stan and Henry. Like there were scenes between Stan and Henry that were like really, you know, just so warm, and they added so much texture and so much meaning to the show as a whole, that, you know, we wouldn't have been able to enjoy the same way in the first season or even second.
Right. It was really good. It was really cool. I wish I could figure out where I remember this from, but it was like they didn't have to say, how did you get here anymore? They said, what does it feel like to be here? In what ways are you conflicted? In what ways are you certain? What's the secret that you have that if everyone else found out, it would be damaging or enlightening? We got to get to those latter more intimate questions than just how did you get here? You know, why is an FBI agent living next door? And in season 3, they stopped inventing and they just started living in the universe that they had invented in the first 2 seasons.
That is really a brilliant insight, honestly. And you know, and it's so true because even you and I were talking about this stuff without even really having that that broad sort of idea as our mantra. But we've talked about this, like, during the season because of Elizabeth and the secret that she has, the shame that she has about her father. We understand that. We know that that's what's going on with her and what's driving her, motivating her, but no one else knows it. And we, in that little piece of that little gem that we have, that knowledge we have, it makes this thing so much more enjoyable. And it's because it's been set up for us. Now we get it. We know this about her. And we couldn't have known it earlier.
Right. Also, if you met these people at a party now, in the universe of the show, at least, if you met, like, Stan at a party, you'd know, oh, you're the kind of beleaguered FBI guy who's super smart, but seems to kind of fumble around with romances and, you know, isn't the most suave guy, but he's super smart, super adept at his job, and he's getting blamed for some stuff by people less adept. Like, you know these characters intimately now. Right. So they can play any role in season 4, and we're ready to go. We're ready to just jump right in it from the get-go.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if I have much else to say about The Americans. It's really kind of teed up perfectly for another interesting season. Really looking forward to seeing where they go with it. But I mean, it ended well. It ended in a way that wasn't like manipulative to make us watch. It was just compelling, and it remains compelling.
Okay. So all right. So I have a few other things I'd like to say about it, and. There's one thing I'm still really, really irritated by, and that is, and I think it was the one mark on the final episode, is the fact that not only was Martha not in it, I could have understood, actually, if she hadn't been in it, and they didn't mention her, and we were just like, oh, crap, we didn't get to see her, but Philip's excuse, like his explanation to Elizabeth, was so lame sounding to me. I was just really, really irritated by that. And I'm still annoyed that she just wasn't there. And then he's all like, oh, she's just got to think about it and she'll get back with me and let me know what she wants to know. It just sounded so made up. I don't know. The only thing I can imagine is that he did, like, secretly murder her, and, like, he's just trying not to tell Elizabeth or something.
Yeah, the whole Martha thing was that she is a loose cannon rolling freely on the deck of the show. I mean, there is no way that she is trustable to keep anything secret. I mean, they created another loose cannon in Paige. She's very much likely to do anything, but at least she's within their grasp.
Well, I mean, but she's gone off and done this thing now. Like, she's actually confessed, you know, to, you know, Tim, and that Pastor Tim, that you know, that her parents are Russians.
So, right, but we haven't had enough time yet to see how they deal with that. We have had enough time with Martha, and they've not dealt with it. So that's different, I think, a little bit. And plus, Martha's away somewhere. She's packed up and gone somewhere. Do you think Philip knows even where she is?
Well, I don't know. I didn't really take that. I don't remember if he said that she was gone or what. But
I saw a suitcase.
The last time we saw her?
Yeah, she had her suitcase on her bed, didn't she? She was, like, ready to go.
Yeah, she was going to go to her mom and dad's, but then he didn't want her to leave, and he, you know, sort of did his spy striptease of taking off his disguise and, you know, revealing himself to her. So I don't
remember the scene. Well, okay, I'll unpack, and she untakes everything out of the suit.
Well, no, she didn't. But he didn't want her to leave, and, you know, it would be a danger if she did leave. So I don't know if she can leave.
Well, he's away from her, so she can do whatever the hell she wants, unless she's huled up. She's bound and gagged like Huel somewhere in a room. By the way, have you seen? Somebody did a YouTube on whatever happened to Huel, and it's an hour long YouTube video and it tells the story of Huel.
Oh no!
But here's the catch. Here's the catch. It's Huel sitting in the room on that chair in the same position for an hour with jazz music.
How long you gonna be?
As long as it takes to keep you safe.
For like an hour. He looks a little bit, he blinks his eyes. It's 1 hour of that, and that's what happened to you. So he's still there.
Oh my God, I love it.
And I think the caption under the or the comments is, I advise you to fast forward to near the end of this. Because it's an hour of him sitting on a chair.
I love it. Because we talked to the podcast guys. I'm sorry, I forget. Remember when we did the Better Call Saul podcast?
Yeah, it's all good, man.
It's all good, man. Guys, we actually talked about that. Like, we were like, what happened with Huel? And I think I said Huel's still in that room. He's still in the safe house, just waiting.
It's kind of an easy joke, though, right? It's like Huel's still sitting there a year and a half later. No, Huel's going to get hungry, and that's going to become his urgency, his priorities. I bet he was there an hour, and he got up and went to, you know, Chick-fil-A or something.
Oh, wait, no, he went to
Pollos Hermanos.
Yes. He got some of that awesome chicken.
But we don't know where Martha is unless she is forcibly killed or held down somewhere. She's free to go wherever. And she's not in a mood to feel safe where she is now. So in hiding or in her mom and dad, stupid to go to her mom and dad's. It's going to be easy to find her there.
Yeah, but you know what? I think that she probably would not move because now she knows who he is. Like, she's got a lot to digest, you know?
So is she going to be forced to, Philip has to tell her, look, I'm really a Russian dude. He can't, this lie has to run out of steam. He can't keep telling her he's some secret agent in the U.S. government. He has to pretty much tell her the truth, I think.
Okay, so here's the deal. You know, I've been thinking until right this second that he told her everything. I don't think he did. Because what he said to Elizabeth, and that may be the answer to why that stupid line, or the line I thought was so stupid, He may not have told her everything. He may have just taken off his disguise and been like, ta-da. And then she was like, what the hell? Get out. And then he was like, well, we need to talk about this. And she was like, okay, I'll let you know when I want to know something. It may just be that. She may not know anything.
Yeah, but
she may just know now.
If you're not Walter Taffet, Clark, who are you? Well, how does he answer that?
Well, he took off his disguise, and let's say the conversation kind of went like this. Like, he took off the disguise, and he's there, and she's, who are you? And he says, I'm not who you think I am, but I care about you, and my feelings are real, or something. And then she says, I need to digest this, go away, and I'll let you know when I want to talk to you, or something.
It's a loose cannon. That looks like that is, in fact, what happened, but that's scary for them, for Philip and Elizabeth.
Yeah, but, and you know what's really, they could have, what's his name, watching her, Hans the murderer.
That's true, that's a great point.
Yeah, so he could be keeping an eye on Martha to make sure she doesn't run off.
All right, well, that's Martha. What else? You said you had a couple things. What other than Martha? Not seeing Martha in the final.
I think we may have seen the last of Gad.
He's going to get fired?
I think he may get fired. Because he was, like, walking into that, into that room to meet with that the higher-up guy.
Yeah, the assistant AG.
Yeah, it didn't look good.
He just told Stan, don't worry, I got your back, too, which was the opposite of what Gad was saying.
Right. So, and Gad has made some big mistakes here, so I don't know, you know? He wasn't featured very heavily at all this season. He wasn't sympathetic this season, because I really liked Gad. I liked him a lot. But this, the last time we saw him was kind of like, you know, he was very easy to kind of let go of because he wasn't a very pleasant guy.
I wonder if the CIA and the FBI and like NSA, whatever these spy agencies are, I wonder if they have protocols for when people get fired. Because, like, think about it in real life. What do you do if you're working for the Ford dealership, you get fired? The first thing you do, you go over to the Chevy dealership, right, to get a job. It's what you know. So I wonder if they have protocols.
Oh, okay.
Most likely next event would be to go to flip over and get money or get a job with the Russians.
Yeah, well, okay, no, because Gad's like a super duper American. Like, there's no way. He's got to eat, but. There's no way. I mean, he's. I don't believe that would happen just because of like the things that you and I've talked about you know, people like that have certain personality types, and you know, they get to where they are because of their personalities and their loyalties and whatever their particular strengths are. So no, I don't think he would flip, but I do think that somebody. Like that would have a difficult time. They would probably have to go into private industry and work there because there are conflicts. Like even with my job, and my job, you know, it's just a techie job. It's not anything that's like important as far as, you know, anything goes except for, you know,
national
a business
security.
Trying to achieve. Right, exactly. So, but even in my job, I mean, like I have to sign non-disclosure agreements across the board for every entity that has anything to do with anything that interacts with what I'm writing. So like right now I'm under three separate non-disclosure agreements and I have very definite non-compete stuff. And, you know, there are specific time limits attached to that. And I mean, it's just really, really deeply laid out. And like you get books that describe, you know, what it is that you can't do or talk about and that sort of thing. So I would say that if you're working for the government, indefinitely.
Yeah, I know, but that's just what you're supposed to not do. I mean, double agents aren't supposed to be double agents. They become them. Right.
Yeah,
you can sign an NDA, but so what?
Well, yeah, I mean, okay, so like if you're gonna go rogue, then yeah, nothing applies. But
you can't be a double agent. You signed an NDA. We're taking you to small claims court.
I love that. But you know, but like Gad's like so by the book. He would never run off and do something wrong. Like he probably doesn't even.
He's pretty straight laced.
Yeah, he didn't jaywalk even.
All right, so anything else? That's Gad, Martha. Well, who else is left behind that we haven't risen? What about Kimmy? She flared up and went away pretty quickly. Do you think they got everything they needed from, because they found the meeting with the Afghani Mujahideen dude, and that's all they needed Kimmy for?
Yeah, I do. I think Kimmy's one and done.
She won't flare up as the raging, angry teenager looking for Jim.
I don't think so. I think she's exhausted her usefulness. But, you know, having an unresolved storyline like that that's sort of, you know, resolved maybe a little bit in the minds of the viewers because we had a, you know, there was kind of a, you know, an unspoken resolution there. That can be useful in terms of the story because you could bring her back later if you needed her. Because, you know, it's resolved to us sort of mentally. We don't need to see anything else with her. But she could come back and we'd be like, whoa, there's Kimmy, you know? So, yeah, maybe, possibly. But I don't think there's any reason to have to address her. I think probably the biggest thing on my mind this season, besides the Martha thing, is really Philip and then Elizabeth. Philip, I feel that Philip is the most broken we've ever seen. And I find it compelling. I wonder about that, even knowing that it's a story and, you know, they're just writing it and making it up as they go. I personally, you know, like I wonder about Philip, like what's in his mind and what's going to come out of it and, you know, how things are going to go because he's really, really broken. And, you know, so that is a big question in my mind. I'm really looking forward to next season because I want to see what they do with him. It could be a really deep, interesting, very emotional and very textured story if we see this man actually break down. And so I'm curious. I really want to know what happens with him. And I think Elizabeth, too, because, you know, both of them have been brought to a real, you know, low point, you know, this season as far as, you know, what's been happening to them and the amount of stress that it's applied to their psyches and to their lives and their family life has been greatly disrupted, you know, by the revelation to Paige. And so I'm really interested to know what's happening inside their minds.
That's a pretty good assessment of Philip. He's pretty broken. That's a great call. And it is at the most dangerous time for them because of this whole thing with Pastor Tim. Somebody's going to have to deal with Pastor Tim. You can't keep letting this thing leak out into more and more further out concentric circles. It has to be cut off. I mean, they're going to have to wipe out this kid, Pastor Tim dude now. Pastor Tim, Martha. I mean, man.
Okay, so like I cannot visualize these folks killing a bunch of people in order to keep their secret, and especially prominent characters like that just dying because they have to keep their secret. So I don't know how this happens, and this could be actually something really interesting coming out of the mind of Joe Weisberg because, you know, maybe that's an issue. Maybe that's something that they actually deal with, you know, in the spy trade. You know, being discovered and how do you handle it without having to murder a bunch of people? you know, what happens? And so I'm really curious.
You think Weisberg's the gardener or the architect?
Well, he's got to be the architect, right?
What do we call Vince Gilligan, the gardener, in that he let characters grow and see where they went, and then he kind of pursued the story and plot that way? Or would you call
it? Yeah, well, yeah. Vince Gilligan referred to that as organic storytelling. And so I think that, I think it's both. I think that Joe Weisberg has constructed a very fine plot. I think he's, that what he's done is very well put together. But I think also that he allows a little bit of that growth, with the characters. You can't really, I think, to really have a good story that's compelling and that the actors can really act to, you have to have a little bit of that, the organic nature of it, don't you think?
Yeah, it's like the trellis, maybe. You got the vine, but you need a little bit of trellis to keep it kind of going upward.
Yeah.
So if he is a gardener, he's in a really tough spot because he's got Martha and Pastor Tim now to figure out what to do with. If he's an architect and he knows what he's going to do with them, which I'm pretty sure he probably does, it's really going to be compelling because I hope he's not winging it and just trying to figure out, like, frantically this summer what to do when he writes the next season. Like, he wasn't sure he even had a next season until about a month ago. I bet he's architect, though. I bet he knows what he's going to do with these people.
Yeah, I think he definitely, it's like anybody has to know. Like Vince Gilligan had his writer's room.
Sure.
And in the writer's room, they talked about, they called it breaking the story. So I think that's definitely the case, but I also think that, that there has to be room for imagination and for coming up with. So you've got to have, it's kind of like what you said, like there's a construct, and then within that construct, you have the ability to create and, take a new direction or maybe change a direction, or something like that. I think that's probably the best way to approach it.
I think so too. He's got a master plan. He might let some growth go here and there sideways a little bit within that framework, but I'm sure he's got the framework.
Well, yeah.
What else, Jamie? Anything else about the Americans?
No. Not that I can think of.
What are you doing with your TV life nowadays?
All right. So, let's see. I've actually restarted The Americans from season one, so I've gotten like two or three episodes in. I am watching. What am I watching? Oh yeah. Watching House of Cards, and getting ready to start on Game of Thrones because I haven't seen the new season, and. I was just actually talking to a friend of mine about maybe doing a podcast on the later seasons of Walking Dead. So I don't know. I mean, because you and I talked about that, and you weren't really interested in doing Talking Dead. And my friend, the Walking Dead, and my friend is like obsessed with the show. He doesn't know anybody else who podcasts.
Yeah, I listened to a couple Walking Dead podcasts in general, you mean?
Yeah.
It'd be cool. It's kind of a full field. There are a lot of people doing it.
But yeah,
it's got a lot of room for commentary, so it is interesting to talk about, I'd listen to it.
If you take different, would you really?
Yeah.
You're so nice. But do you watch it? Do you watch The Walking Dead?
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. Yes, I don't know, because you know me. I'm sort of, I don't watch a lot of television. And so pretty much, what I see. Oh, you know what I do watch, though? And I'll tell you, this is a big confession for me, because I don't like confessing it, because to me it's kind of like trash TV a little bit. But I watch Scandal. I really like it. And so I just watched the season finale like two nights ago.
Huh, I haven't seen Scandal.
You should. I don't know if you would like it. You might, though, because like you watch The Affair and you like it, and it's got like a lot of psychology in it. Well, Scandal is kind of like that, where it's got kind of like these relationship type stuff. But it's also kind of like a spy thing, too, because there's a lot of intrigue and stuff involved in it. So it's kind of a meld of the both. And it's written by Shonda Rhimes, who is kind of she kind of goes in that soapy direction on occasion, but this show is kind of true to its roots, and so it doesn't really go there. It's not like Grey's Anatomy or something where, you know, where you're like, oh, what's going to happen with these two? Oh no, are they going to break up? And you know, it's not like that. It's much more compelling and real and violent and existentially sort of interesting.
So you mentioned Game of Thrones. So you've watched Game of Thrones all but this season, and you're about to catch up to this season?
Yes. Yeah, I can't wait, actually, because I haven't watched any of the new season. So I'm just waiting. And Game of Thrones is one of those shows that I have to actually, like, watch YouTube videos about, like, to try to keep up with, because it's got, like, so much depth and there's so many layers to it and that sort of thing. And I haven't read the books. And so, you know, for me to watch it really intelligently, I need help with that show. And so,
yeah, I think everyone does. Did you watch those little compilations that I sent you, the animated ones?
Yes, yes,
those
I
are
did.
Really good. Those are, somebody did them. I have nothing to do with how they were produced. I just found them, but they're on YouTube. Game of Thrones compilation. I think if you search that, you'll find them.
Yeah, those were really cool. That was like when we first met, Mike.
Yeah, that was, what, 8 months ago? 6 months
ago? Yeah, something like that. Gosh, that was so long ago.
So no Mad Men? You're not watching Mad Men?
Okay, so I started Mad Men a few years ago, and then I got really busy with work, and so I wasn't watching. So I've got, like, I think like a season of Mad Men in my pocket, and I need to just go ahead and watch the rest of the series, but I'm certainly going to watch it. You know, it's just too good to not watch.
I'm caught up to where they are in real time, and there's one episode left today. This is Sunday, the 17th. Yeah, I'm calling Mad Men the best TV show I've ever watched out of anything I've ever seen.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. That's really interesting to hear you say that, because you watch some really good television.
Yeah, I'm putting it above a little bit above Breaking Bad. I'm putting it above The Wire. Certainly above, like, Walking Dead. The Americans, you know, a little above The Americans. It's just so good. It's just so good. The character interactions and just the way they nailed the time stamp of the 60s and 70s. It's just, I don't know, just pretty close to perfect.
Wow. Well, it's interesting to hear you say that, because, you know, you and I were sort of messaging back and forth. We were instant messaging back and forth one night about it. And you said how really, really, really good the last season was. And the very next day, I was sitting in my my editing class, and the instructor was talking about it, and he said the opposite. He was like, well, it's really gone downhill. And I thought, I don't know if I really buy that from you, instructor, because Mike, who knows a whole lot about television, feels the opposite.
I think it's very subjective. It's like you like it or not. I mean, if you like cars blowing up and gunshots, you're not going to like it. But if you like drama and interactions between people and personalities and psychology, it's really, really good.
So. Yeah, see, that's kind of my wheelhouse. It's like I can take the violence. I don't mind violence. I like it if it's well done, but it's not my first go-to. Like last night, oh, God, last night, we went to see Mad Max, and it was technically fantastic, just really, really well rendered. But I think I told somebody my assessment of the shows.
The president was greeted by veteran Soviet ambassador
to offer condolences on the death of Leonid Brezhnev.
The operation is what's crucial, because what we do is for the good of the many. Don't let your conscience get us killed.
If you tell her now, it will all blow up.
But at least she'll know who she is.
Every move you make will never bow you break.
I need names.
people working in the CIA.
I've got him.
Wait. They should grab her, set up a roadblock, pull her over before it's too late.
Excuse me, ma'am.
January 28th at 10, only on FX.
To, you know, how life is different after that. And that's the kind of stuff that's really compelling to me, because I like the human angle, and I like the story angle, and I like the depth and the detail and that kind of stuff. Like, so if I'm, like, for example, and one of my favorite movies is I Am Legend, the Will Smith I Am Legend version of it, and I loved it so much because there was so much connection between who he is now and what life was like in the past and what happened to get him to the point where he was, and how he just, you know, all of that detail to me, that's what's fascinating. You know, that the idea of, you know, the world after something awful has happened. And so, you know, there was a little bit of that there, but not nearly what I would have wanted. But I didn't have a fair expectation because I had not seen the original movies.
Omega Man. Yeah, I liked I Am Legend a lot, too. Omega Man looks pretty cheesy compared to I Am Legend. But, you know, okay. Charlton Heston from the 70s, I think, Omega Man.
Right.
But it's a remake of Omega Man. Yeah, you might like Last Man on Earth. It's just like I Am Legend. Just kidding. That's a joke. It's nothing like that. Essentially, the last man on Earth and what he does to survive, but in a comedic way. But yeah, I Am Legend was awesome. Will Smith is really good. And just seeing, you're right, the map of how he got to where he is from where he was with his family and the civilization going that way, and now he has to deal with barren streets of New York and just talking to mannequins and stuff. That was very, very cool.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. It was one of my favorite movies. And so that, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, I would have, if I had, but I mean, you know, thank goodness for writers, because if I had had to conceive Mad Max, it would have been a whole different animal. You know, it would not have been an action film. It would have been something totally different.
Is Mad Max, the remake, still in Australia?
Oh, okay. So there are some Australian accents. It seems to be kind of in a no man's land. I don't know where it is, honestly. There wasn't a lot of reference to place, but there were, like I said, some Australian accents, and there were not others. You know, everybody kind of had their own, they brought their own accent to the table. And in fact, Charlize Theron, who has a perfectly fine South African accent, and could have really probably well approximated an Australian one, did her American accent. So,
yeah. I guess the original one isn't really Australian either. It's just kind of somewhere in the world.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, this one kind of had that no man's land feel to it.
So you might like.
By the way, I was going to ask you that. Were there books that were there like before the? Was this movie series based on books?
I don't know.
It would be interesting to know, because there's a history. It feels to me like there's a real backstory there that's like not unspoken, but maybe stuff that we should know. And it could be based on the fact that this is a third, I think it's the third, right, in a series.
I think it's the fourth, because there was Mad Max, there was Beyond the Thunderdome. There was maybe Beyond the Thunderdome was the third one. I think there were three way back.
Okay.
And then this one now is four.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, however it goes, I mean, it that part really did feel, there was such an element of, you know, reality, like fake reality, of course, fantasy, but of realism, to the story, because there were so many references there that I didn't have any clue about, but they were very organic and they were very much part of the story and the understanding, kind of like the, you know, the lore that's, I guess, attached to it. It was really, really, it was well written and it was well conceived and it was well executed. It just wasn't quite my thing, that's all.
Yeah, it looks super produced. I mean, it looks good with all the action scenes and stuff.
Yeah, well, yeah. 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 I mean, that's for sure. And I would expect, you know, most people, I'd say 90% of people, to walk away and just really be blown out of the water by it.
So what else, Jamie? What else is going on? I was going to say, I guess I interrupted you, that if you like that, you might like the new Walking Dead, where they kind of show how the world went to hell.
You know what? Okay. Here's the thing, and this is how you're gonna. This will tell you everything you need to know about me as far as that kind of television and that kind of storytelling goes. When The Walking Dead first came out, I watched the first episode, and during the first episode, I was sitting there with my family, and I was like, "What happens to lead up to this? Please let them go back in time and show what happens to lead up to this. This is the part I want to know." And I'm like, you know, sitting there telling my family this, and they're like, "Yeah, that would be really awesome. I hope they show what happens." And then I go, you know, to work the next day. And oddly, I was working at the same place that I'm now newly working at again. And I was telling one of my coworkers who does like all the cons. Like, she, you know, she was into Dragon Con and Comic Con and all that. And she said, no, they've actually said that they're not going to do anything about what leads up to it. And so we're not going to get to know that story. And that was the real actual official line on it at the time. And I was so disappointed. And so when I found out that they were doing this prequel, I was so excited.
So what are they going to do if they're not going to do that?
Well, they are going to do it now, but this was initially when The Walking Dead first premiered.
You mean the second version of The Walking Dead?
No.
Oh, when it first came out, they said they would never say how it got to be this way.
Exactly.
I gotcha.
But they changed it. Yeah, and now, and I'm so excited that they changed that, because I really can't wait. And I think I'll probably like the second one. I'll like the prequel better than I actually like the series, and I really like the series.
I remember one scene in the Walking Dead that's currently on, like in season one or two, or like really early in the series, where they showed a flashback to Lori. She was at like Carl's school talking to another mom, kind of pre-apocalypse. That was really cool, kind of showing like, wow, that was life in this universe before it all went south. And, you know, it made me hungry to know more about how it went south.
Exactly.
Remember that? She's sitting outside talking to her friend just about, oh, marriage isn't going so hot. And it was like, wow, maybe we'll know more. We'll get to see more. But it was only just a taste. They didn't go in depth.
Exactly. And that was, I felt like that was a huge mistake. That was one of those moments where you want to whisper into the ear of the showrunner or the creator of the series and be like, please, I'm begging you, don't not give us this. And, you know, apparently, you know, it worked out in the favor of all the people who were in love with that kind of stuff. So,
well, maybe Kirkman knew all along, or maybe he listened to people. I don't know. Maybe he changed his take on it and decided to come out with the prequel.
Yep, that's exactly what happened. There was a change. Yeah. You know, and that could have been, I don't know anything about where it came from. But I kind of wonder if it was AMC or Sony, or, you know, who it was, you know, who came to him, or if he just decided like, wow, you know, that really is a good idea. Maybe we'll do that. You know, but I'd be interested to know who really sort of, you know, seriously started talking about that would be a good thing to do.
Yeah. Well, Hollywood doesn't like to leave success alone. Like, look at the Better Call Saul now from Breaking Bad, and here we are, Walking Dead, Mad Max. They like to glom other appendages on to their successes for the money. I think more probably for the money aspect than the creative aspect.
Well, maybe from a certain angle, you know, maybe from a certain angle. Like, yeah, maybe production companies or, you know, studios, you know, or networks might feel that way. I think probably when it comes down to really excellent entertainment, though, I think that the people who actually create it, the writers and stuff, there's got to be a big piece of that that's and maybe the majority piece that's not concerned with the money, but that is concerned with the actual storytelling and the entertainment.
Well, Jamie, I can't wait for the Canadians, the spinoff from the Americans, the Northern version.
That would be so crazy.
And then the Mexicans.
Mike, you are insane.
All right, Jamie. Well, we got to find something else to podcast about. I don't know what, but we'll do something.
Okay, so I've got to tell you, I've got a little secret project in the works, and I mean, you can edit this out if you want to. But here's my secret project. I'm going through. I'm starting from episode one of The Americans, and I'm going to try to figure out like where we've been right and where we've been wrong all along on the storyline, and kind of like build a cohesive trail of, you know, story and our sort of our narrative of as we've gone through, you know, our podcasts and the things that we've predicted and the things that we've had, you know, kind of discussions about and maybe some conflict about, to try to see where we really are, see if we can kind of predict where we're going, or at least have like a really nice cohesion between ourselves and the story as we build our podcast as we go forward.
Do you have a quick taste of that, a sample of that? Like, what are you thinking of where we might have been right and wrong?
Okay, so, yeah, so we've actually been really good, Mike. Like, our predictions and our speculation has been really accurate. Even the places where we've been off a little bit, we've been right in a different way. Like, for example, when we were talking about Martha, and you were, like, totally wrong on Martha, and I was right on Martha, but guess what? When you predicted, you were trying to say what was going to happen, like how they were going to resolve that whole thing about the listening device in Gad's office. Do you know what you said? You said that they were going to like make it seem as though that Martha planted it and then she committed suicide.
I remember that.
And that is exactly what happened, but it was Jean and not Martha.
Yeah, huh.
Yeah.
Well, so, Martha may still commit suicide. I'm not accepting this mantle of incorrectness yet.
You are breaking our agreement. You said that you would not bother me anymore about Martha dying if she made it to the season finale.
Well, that season's over.
All right, that's true. but like that's just one example of the things that we've gotten right. But we really, seriously, when we reason about things and we speculate about them, we are wildly accurate.
Well, that was kind of wrong, but right, but the wrong person.
Well, yeah, but that's I'm giving you an example of something that you got wrong, but even the wrong was kind of right.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
That is a cool idea, though. Maybe a little review of what we've projected and what our track record is, and that would be kind of interesting to do.
Yeah, I think so. It's fun going back and rewatching and then listening to the podcasts and, you know, seeing where we are in those as we go along. And then, you know, and it's cool because I know now, like I know what's happened. So some of the stuff that we're speculating about, I'm like, oh, what's going to happen? You know, we're all like freaking out in the podcast about it. Now we know. And so it's kind of cool.
We'd only have to go through two seasons too. It's not like there's seven seasons and we got six to catch back up through.
Right, exactly.
Okay, well, yeah.
And actually, I'll tell you something. I think it would be a cool thing to do if our listeners actually also wanted to go through, like, if you guys are really jonesing for The Americans, why don't you start over at the pilot, and then, you know, as you know, if we're on and we're talking about, you know, what's happening, and our whole, you know, our relationship to the show through the podcast, you guys can keep up with it with us.
Yeah, maybe we should try to get some of the stars on the podcast. We had the main star, the robot, but maybe we should try to get like Joe Weisberg and Okay, we'll settle for Joel Fields if we have to, but just kidding, Joel Fields, you're great, you're awesome. But yeah, that'd be fun to talk to some people on the show if we can get them to come on.
That would be cool.
We'll get Martha on while she's still alive.
Would you quit it? She's not going to want to talk to you. She's going to be afraid you're going to try to murder her yourself.
I'll be nice to her.
All right.
All right, Jamie, that's about it for now. If you want to reach us, come to the West Coast Project podcast website, westcoastproject.com. We have a bunch of our other feeds. You can hear Jamie in one of our other episodes for The Affair, where you did some commentary on the Kurosawa movie. So just check out the website, West Coast Project. And if you want to reach me, you can find me at Scathing Tweets on Twitter. And Jamie, how about you?
At Word Girly.
All right. So until we talk again.
Awesome. Talk to you soon, Mike.
See you, Jamie. Bye-bye.
How long you gonna be?